Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is supported this week by Ariel Trouche and CharlestonAddress.com. As most of you know, I'm a food writer based in Charleston, South Carolina. And here's what happens to many people when they visit. They start wondering, how can I live here? There is a glow about those just falling in love with the Lowcountry. And although I've been here close to 13 years, I will still often have that glow myself. But navigating the right place to live if you do decide to be here is a toughie. Our waterways provide a natural division of experiences, so living on Sullivan's Island is much different than living out by the plantations in West Ashley, for instance. And with the price of residential real estate here hovering around $225 a square foot, you should choose wisely. Ariel Trouche of CharlestonAddress.com can help you do that. She's lived in Charleston for 30 years and routinely lists some of the most impressive properties in the region. But she also knows how you feel. She's one of those people that fell in love with the Lowcountry while in school here, and she's never left. Oh, and she's also lived in multiple areas too, so she knows neighborhoods and the quirks of each location, including where to get the best eats in every neighborhood. But you should know that from listening to the show, right? Basically, it's simple. Ariel is not only about real estate service and matching the right houses to the right clients, but she is also part of the Carolina One real estate family. She has lots of resources at her fingertips. She has experience, and she has the knowledge you need if you're ready to move. Check her out at CharlestonAddress.com to get started. And let her know I sent ya. Growing up Southern, hurricanes are a part of life. You know the season, the categories. You know that just because you can't see the ocean does not mean you won't see a hurricane's effects. But things have changed in the past few years. It feels like it's become more about capturing those ratings rather than sharing realistic information. And so things are beginning to skew. Not only are we getting more powerful storms as climate change becomes apparent, we are wondering whose information to trust when politics, ratings, and even the business economy of storm prep is all playing a bigger and bigger part. Then, after the storm, many of us that didn't get hit, and that's most of us, send thoughts and prayers that feel overwhelmed and drained by the enormity of fear we just experienced. Fear, more than anything, makes you catatonic, unable to see a way. My job today is to counter that helplessness by helping you hear another side. The helpers are still out there, and some of them cook food, and the following is one of their stories. Chef Daniel Doyle of Pugin's Porch and Pugin's Smokehouse in Charleston joined Operation Barbecue Relief after Hurricane Florence. He saw hive mentality at work and became a worker bee in that hive, all by just showing up and making spaghetti. This is his story from the front lines, and as you listen, please remember that Operation Barbecue Relief is mobilizing in Florida today, in the wake of another devastating storm. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Chef.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I really, really pull out the luxury. We're sitting here in the, what is this, the Pugin's Hospitality?
Looks like a, I think it's a linen closet slash paint layer or there's some power cords, some, you know.
We're on the, yes, yes. We are in a historic house that you would never know is the corporate offices for Pugin's Porch and Pugin's Smokehouse. But we're sitting in the linen closet because I aim to really give my guests a luxury experience. But that aside, you just came back from Eastern North Carolina, and you definitely didn't have a luxury experience at all. Talk to me a little bit. We are going to talk a little bit today about Operation Barbecue. So,
all right. Florence is supposed to head here. I had a trip planned to actually go to Costa Rica and have some fun, you know, after a long season. And as that kind of, you know, started coming to fruition and realizing it wasn't going to get here, but I realized that we were going to have to get restaurants back open and all the things that were going on, I was like, you know, maybe I should postpone this trip to the following week. And so I did. And after realizing that it wasn't going to get here and we got restaurants back open, I started thinking, you know, I talk about or I feel about all these years to go help during these times of need, and yet I either make an excuse or it just doesn't happen or something to that effect. And you know,
you had the time.
I had the time. And so,
which normally you wouldn't.
Which you absolutely wouldn't. It was slow here in Charleston and I'd already wasn't even supposed to be in town. So I, you know, got up with my buddy who I was supposed to meet in Costa Rica and let him know what my plans were. And, you know, I decided to reach out to some friends that I grew up with that live in Wilmington. You know, I was a chef there. I guess I was a line cook there for a number of years before I moved here to go to culinary school. And just to kind of find out what was going on and see if they were okay and that mm-hmm. and that type of thing. And, you know, realized it was pretty bad in you know, southern, eastern North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And decided at that point that I really wanted to do something about it, or at least try to help do something about it. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to Sam Jones from Sam Jones Barbecue, the world famous Sam Jones.
Hey, Sam Jones. See, I can't go more than a couple podcasts without saying hey to you, Sam Jones.
Well, I mean, everybody loves him.
That's right.
I mean, and, you know, he basically said, you know, in Aiden and in Greenville that they were good. They, you know, they were right on the, I guess, the cusp of being okay. And so at that point in time, he was like, you know, but I know my buddy Stan Hayes at Operation Barbecue or OBR, you know, could use as much help as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, he kind of put us together. I had done, you know, I'd heard about OBR, but I didn't realize what kind of operation it was. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, had done any homework up to that point. And then I started looking into it and I was like, wow, it's a really, really cool operation. So at that point, I basically just packed up and drove to Wilmington and decided to get started. That's basically how it all started.
So we've been hearing a lot on the national news about World Kitchen, Jose Andres, amazing World Kitchen that is able to mobilize chefs and culinary volunteers around the world. Definitely worked in Puerto Rico and is worked in Eastern North Carolina, has worked in Houston. I mean, just all around the world.
OBR started in 2011.
Yes.
So I think it was probably one of the first in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and basically they just kind of became something that they did more, I don't want to say as a hobby, but more of a way of reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just became more and more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
so they mobilized in Eastern North Carolina. And so what is the town that you were in?
Well, they were in Wilmington mm-hmm. originally, but they were servicing several other towns, even mm-hmm. into Conway, South Carolina, the way I understand it. So they mm-hmm. would, you know, they had, you know, different organizations that would come pick up food. They would drive trucks out to other locations and all kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of those situations where they were feeding, you know, predominantly Wilmington, but also other smaller towns. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when you got there, we were talking about this, you just were, like, jumping in. Let me help. So you had to start cleaning smokers, right?
So, you know, I got there.
It's not a glamorous life. No, it wasn't. Life of volunteer.
Right? Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been a volunteer, I guess. Usually I'm telling people to clean the smokers, not just clean the smokers. So basically, I got there and met everybody and just walked up to the nearest guy I saw that had, like, mm-hmm. one of the organizer t-shirts on. I was like, hey, what do you guys need? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have any real plan or any kind of any real idea how that mm-hmm. was going to go at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, ideally I was wanting to do something different than my first job, but ultimately, I mean, they were like, okay, let me show you what I need you to do. And there's, you know, 15 or so, maybe 12 large rotisserie smokers sitting there that needed to be cleaned out and all the oil taken out of it. Mm-hmm. They had to start smoking on the side that I didn't get the chance to clean yet. By the time I got to the other side, I would have mm-hmm. done 15 or so. I think I ended up getting like 6 or 7, maybe 8 mm-hmm. done before they had to start smoking again. Maybe they didn't realize that I was going to clean them like I was in my restaurant. I didn't realize they didn't really specify. So when they tell me to clean it, I'm thinking,
okay, I know how to do this.
Clean it. So, you know, and that was the first half of my day there. And then the second half, another non-glamorous job was basically just making spaghetti and different pastas. I mean, cases upon cases upon cases of pasta. I mean, hundreds of pounds of pasta made.
Were y'all serving people right then, or were you making meals to pack up to go?
Well, a little bit of both. They had some further on the other side of the parking lot where we're set up. We were set up on College Road in Wilmington. On the other side, there was the Salvation Army was set up over there, and we were feeding people that would drive up. Mm-hmm. So there was that going on, but mostly it was being shipped to, you know, like churches and, I don't want to say soup kitchens, but you know what I mean? Other areas,
shelters
and things to feed people. So they were packing up pallets and pallets and pallets of meals, thousands of meals a day. Mm-hmm. Which
so it was logistics as well as how to keep the food hot, packing it up in these pallets, having the trucks there.
I mean, it was
knowing the route that isn't going to be flooded out to get to the people that you need to get to. So.
Yeah, logistically, it was set up like I couldn't believe.
Right.
I mean, the infrastructure that they bring with them and the people behind the scenes that do this are just amazing people because they just understand how to do it, and it's. I don't know. I've never seen an operation like that. I've done huge catering events. I've done some big stuff. I feed thousands of people a day myself, but not in that type of capacity. Mm-hmm. Not where I'm like getting it from this point, over this checkpoint, through this barricade. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they could figure it out.
And also getting it there when it's edible.
Yeah.
Not getting it there, you know, where if so that you keep the stuff cold, you keep the hot stuff hot. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're taking care of it.
And there was stuff that was closed for hours that would be up and back up and be hot even when we, you know, what we did the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was inspirational to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So were you able to, so you stayed basically and became back of the house, in other words.
Yeah,
so did you ever have to go and serve? You know, how many people, like, can you give me a sense of, like, how many people were out there? 50?
I mean, volunteer-wise,
yeah.
I would say more like 100, probably. I mean, that's a guesstimate. I mean, it was a good bit because you had, I'd say closer to 100, and then maybe a little bit more with people with forklifts and, you know, moving trucks and all that stuff. So there's... On the busiest day I was there, you know, I'm sure sometimes there's more and sometimes there's a little less, but I would say close to 100.
Right. And we could all get to Wilmington. Yeah. It's definitely those areas outside, you know, my friend Matthew Register. Hey, Matthew, Garland, North Carolina. Matthew and Sam have been on the show and, you know, following along with them and seeing some of the smaller towns, there just isn't the infrastructure to help in the same way.
Exactly.
So you went out the next day.
Right? So the next day I had a friend of mine, Beetle, shout out to my man Beetle. I had told him what I was doing in Wilmington. He and I knew each other for years and years and years. He was one of my college roommates. I don't know if I call it college, but you know, it was my college years, let's say. I kind of went to class. But anyway, that's...
Oh, your parents really need to know that, right?
They've been told. Well, and so I picked him up, and he and I went down there. And, you know, once again, I just kind of went to the same guy. I was like, what can you have me do? And it was another one of those, you know, mundane kind of jobs where I was basically filling up all the ice chests with drinks for all the volunteers. Mm-hmm. It was the first thing he needed me to do. And I was like, that's fine. People are going to need waters and Gatorades. It's, you know, 85, 90 degrees outside in the sun. And they're cooking thousands of meals. And right about that time, Sam walks up, Sam Jones. He was like, well, you want to maybe come with me and go and drop off some food with some people and, you know, basically help me load up this truck and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, Sam, yeah, absolutely. And we basically loaded up this truck full of rations and, you know, food and even like pastries and things, and drove to Pollocksville first. And and as you went, you know, north of Wilmington, and by all means, Wilmington had a lot of damage, by all means. And so there was really big pockets of damage. I mean, you could see trees down, water damage. It was weird in Wilmington, like certain neighborhoods looked untouched, and other neighborhoods, you know,
were destroyed. It's all about the tide and the surge and the
destroyed.
Storm
I mean, and not even that far from each other, within a mile or two.
Yeah.
You know, like I was in Leland, and parts of Leland looked fine, and then there's other parts of Leland that were really bad off, and Leland's right over the bridge from Wilmington. So, you know, I mean, there's all that going on. So as you went north, though, you could see, like, heading towards Pollocksville and New Bern and Trenton. Because you're on the backside of the storm on that side, so there was a lot of damage and a lot of water. So when we got to Pollocksville, Sam is he's the fire chief of Aiden, and so he was like, "Look, we can go to the fire station. I met the chief the other day. He had sent me a friend of mine had sent me something that they need some help here, you know, something along those lines." And so we got there, and riding in, you couldn't really tell, but when we got to the fire station and we dropped off food, the amount of like graciousness or happiness or I can't even
write.
The response for that, for us being there, was it was like something I've never seen. You know, I mean, they were just so happy for it, and so I don't yearning for some help. You know what I mean? And the thing about towns like that, they don't have the infrastructure when it's just a random Wednesday. You know what I mean? Poverty levels, you know, high in those smaller little towns in North Carolina and South Carolina, for that matter. You know,
and Florida.
You know, so. We dined with them, and the prayer, I mean, like, put tears to my eyes. The lady was so gracious and happy for us to be there. And so then we went to, after that experience was very rewarding. Like, I hadn't felt that type of sense of, I don't want to say pride, but sense of pride in a long time. Like, I'm doing something, the right thing. You know? Like, I'm doing the right thing. You know, this was the right call not to go take my trip, and this was the right call to come here and try to help people. Like, you know, a sense of fulfillment is a good word. And so after that, we drove to Trenton, and very similar situation in Trenton. I mean, we were also in the fire station, and you got firemen and National Guardsmen and stuff sleeping in different rooms because they've been doing all-night shifts. And, you know, so that was another kind of, you know, mind-opening experience. You know, like, these people haven't slept except for 2 or 3 hours at a time for almost a week at this point.
I mean, it's a triage moment.
It was like something I hadn't ever seen firsthand, like what they had to go through just to get these things done. And so after we dropped off in Trenton, Sam was like, "Hey, man, let's ride back to Pollocksville, because it's kind of on our way back, and let's like ride around the town. We'll go across the barricades and we'll check it out." And you know, the crazy part about that is that from what I could see with my own eyes, I mean, I probably saw 60 to 70 houses, if not more than that, that had, you know, 8 to 10 foot of water in them. I mean, they're pulling out all their possessions and everything that they own and sticking on the street. I mean, ripping out drywall. I mean, just the amount of devastation that that particular area and a lot of towns like that in both states, you know, for that matter, was really devastating to see. You know, we went down to, which I'm pretty sure is a creek that looked like a lake, you know, there were street signs you could barely see still. And you're talking 5-6 days later. I mean, the amount of water that inundated that little town, I mean, some people, I mean, from what I understand, it was 7 to 10 feet of water that came on them quite quickly. The assistant fire chief of Pollocksville, you know, basically told us that they shut it down at like 2 o'clock the night of, and they try to go to bed and try to get back out in a couple hours just to get back at it. And, you know, they were awoken by someone just beating on the door, like crying for help. And they had to get in boats right then and start rescuing people from their houses.
Wow.
I mean, you know, the water line is 5 and 6, 7 feet up on houses. You can see it. I mean, it was a really kind of, I mean, just seeing it with your own eye. Yeah, it's very sobering. It's very, you know, what a hurricane or a natural disaster can do to a community is something I had never seen firsthand. I'd heard about it or read about it or seen it, but seen it
firsthand. And it's different here in Charleston. or in a Wilmington, like in Charleston when we thought it was coming. I mean, Charleston galvanized 50,000 pounds of sand and had it boom, 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 all these places all around town for us to fill up with bags. It was orderly. We went out there. I mean,
yeah.
You just don't have that.
You don't have that. You don't have the infrastructure. You don't have the money. You don't have the government structure to pull mm-hmm. those things out, right. to mobilize those type of efforts.
That stuff has to happen fast.
Yeah, they don't exist.
So you've stayed in touch with them, and you were finding out that we're talking right now as right at the border of a Category 5 hurricane has just come on land right at Panama City, Florida,
yeah.
which is full of little towns that are low-lying, places that don't have a lot of infrastructure. I mean, yeah. 30A is a beautiful part of this country. I mean, all places are beautiful in their own way. So Operation Barbecue Relief is headed there.
They're already on the way. You mm-hmm. know, I did some text with Stan yesterday, and you know, he was on the road already yesterday. I mean, and I'm almost certain they didn't get back to Kansas City till less than a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, to get all that stuff back, you're talking transfer truck after transfer truck, getting that all the way back to right. Kansas City from North Carolina. That's not something that's going to take a day.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I mean, Stan and OBR couldn't have been back more than a week. Mm-hmm. And if not, for them to be able to do those type of things and having that type of dedication, being away from their family and friends and their, I don't want to say real jobs, but their jobs and all those things to do that I commend them for that. And so having said that, any way that you can help and donate or volunteer or do whatever mm-hmm. you can would be something that I think would be quite rewarding.
And they have Operation Barbecue Relief .org on yeah. as a website, and you can volunteer and donate buttons right from there. But for you as a chef, I mean, you definitely had you cooked and you served as well.
Mm-hmm.
But going, it sounds like you were in contact with the first responders. When you think about that, like, I don't know, for me, I'm like, wow, that's really overwhelming. That's an overwhelming thing. And you're coming in and you're one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me that because of the barbecue and because of the rations that you brought, you felt like you literally had an impact on the places that you were there for, right?
I mean, exactly.
It was much more than a meal, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, at that point, you know, you're trying to, you know, the first responders are can be from anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of those guys are from California that were in Trenton. So mm-hmm. they're sent from wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So they're displaced. But I mean, I think a lot of that for me was, is that if you think about it in the most realist of ways, or the most broke down way, you have to eat every day. And so if you're trying to put your life back together, i.e. pulling everything out of your house and, you know, just not having to worry about how am I going to eat the next couple mm-hmm. days, that takes a lot off your plate.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's true.
I mean, like if you're not worried about it, how am I going to get water, or mm-hmm. how am I going to, you know, sustenance to survive.
Right.
And most people don't think of it in that type of way. But I mean, just think about it.
You'll get sick, or you won't be able to, you just won't have the energy. I mean, we are machines. We need gas.
Exactly. So
right.
just that type of thing is a basic of a level.
You're a big fancy corporate chef now. You're removed from that day to day giving your food. I mean, besides your kids, you know, giving that food to that person. But you got to kind of get back there.
Yeah, it was very humbling and a great experience. And I think that if the opportunity arises again, I'll probably go help again. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that once I understand where they're at and where the devastation level is and the accessibility to, you know, that part of Florida, I might go down and help a couple of days again. Mm-hmm. It was very, for me, it was a spiritual kind of thing. And mm-hmm. then, you know, even on the third day, on a more grassroots thing for me, I was able to help some of my friends that lived there with their houses and do tarping houses and getting trees out of yards, and just to kind of like help them get their lives together mm-hmm. as well. So it was like one of those things where, you know, I was able to
do personal and professional.
Yeah, like almost run the full gamut of
yeah.
trying to be helpful, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, if people want to learn more about Daniel Doyle and Pugin's Porch and Pugin's Smokehouse here in Charleston, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. But today, we're going to make sure that the focus is on Operation Barbecue Relief. We'll have links to both of those things. Please go to the Southern Fork to hit those links. If you're like me, generally, this kind of shit feels really overwhelming. And so you go, what can I do? I remember when Hurricane Katrina hit, I wanted to send like a lot of like water bottles and stuff, not, you know, just like coffee mugs and stuff that people needed. That's not what they need. Right now, what you can do is hit that volunteer button or hit that relief button. These are people that are on the ground right now helping, and they're going to the Gulf to do this again. They are also keeping an eye out because remember, this hurricane is coming right back through that spot that is still devastated and flooded.
And that's the one thing that I want to close with that. I think, you know, what happens is after these disasters like Michael and Florence, you know, the first couple of weeks it's in our consciousness and we understand it and you're thinking about it. But after all that clears out, those towns and those communities still have a really long way to go. And so you got to figure out a way to like even try to help in those times as well. I think a lot of people, you know, the first couple of weeks, you see it on the news, you watch the Weather Channel, you know, it's on CNN or whatever. And so you know, it's in your consciousness. And so you think about it.
And it pulls your heartstrings at that time.
But I mean, really the biggest part of that is after all the dust has settled and everybody's gone, who's helping them get back on their feet? Wilmington and I went through Fran and Bertha. It rebounded. And Wilmington will rebound from Florence. It has the infrastructure to do so. But these little towns on the outskirts of these bigger cities that don't have the infrastructure to rebound,
Some of them might never.
Never recover back to their former glory or whatever.
Right. Well, thank you so much for going to volunteer for us. And thanks for talking to me today.
Welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. Today, this is coming to you from downtown Charleston, from a quiet residential street, which is unfortunately made less quiet by a little mini army of people and leaf blowers today. That is because we are cleaning up after a lot of wind when Hurricane Michael passed by yesterday. So there were a lot of leaves down, and that means the leaf blowers come out, and they have been out all day. So if you're wondering, yes, but you'll hear that in the background, and we're just moving on. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit today about Operation Barbecue Relief, but also what's hiding behind this podcast is the idea that there are hidden talents for chefs and people in the food and beverage business, I guess I should say. And we don't think about that very often, but really what is at play here is logistics. And we talked a lot about infrastructure and things like that, but restaurateurs, people in the food and beverage business, chefs, cooks, they all know how to mobilize, organize, and create systems for efficiency, and specifically for efficiency to feed a lot of people at one time. If you're not in the restaurant world, you probably don't really even think about this. You just sit down, somebody You think about if it doesn't work, like it takes them 10 minutes to come get my drink order. Yeah, that sucks. I don't like that either. But logistics, when they break down, we notice. When they don't, we just enjoy the evening. We enjoy the meal. A lot of restaurants might serve 250 people a night. That's called covers in the restaurant world. They might do 250 covers a night. Some places might even do 500 on a busy night. You're feeding 500 people, and you have to get their food out in a reasonable time. You have to be prepared. You have to have organization. You have to have training in order to do that. And so this logistics background, this mobilization of a large group of people to do one task, which is to serve people food and make that food, serve that food, clean it up, and do it all over again, that comes in real handy when there is a crisis. So chefs like Jose Andres are talking about this on NPR. There's that damn leaf blower again. I don't understand. I'm not even close to him. It just carries in downtown Charleston, I guess. Also, Operation Barbecue Relief, they were started by Competition Barbecue guys. And those people are used to cooking a large amount of food that can feed a lot of people. So this can really, really help in crisis management. And this might not be your skill. It's not my skill. I mean, I worked in F&B for a long time, and I knew how to do it, but I'm definitely out of practice now. But my skill is telling y'all about it and getting the word out. I've got a big mouth, so I just talk about it. There are hidden skills that you can use in your 10 square feet. What do you know how to do? What would you say if somebody said, "Can you do that?" You go, "Yeah, I'm good at that. I know how to do that." There is something within your life, within what your skill set already is, that you can use to help somebody else or be an asset. So this logistics thing that's coming out now with chefs and crisis situations, that's a great way to think about your own life. And I'm thrilled to be in the food and beverage world where I can see this kind of mobilization often. That's talking with my mouth full today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for checking out Operation Barbecue Relief. Until next time.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?